Hello? Hello? Is this thing on?
Hello. I hate Hello? This bit.
It's been 2 years since we've recorded an episode.
Look, it's been a rough couple of years.
It has been, and I don't feel bad about taking time off, but good golly, I did not expect it to be this long.
Hey, life gets away from you.
Comes at you fast.
Stuff happens.
It sure does.
It sure
I've forgotten
does.
If we're allowed to swear. I think we are.
Wait, should we try not to swear? Wasn't that a thing of like...
Oh, no. Okay, I remember. It's been... Oh, my God. We did it at the beginning, and then we did a poll. We put up a poll and asked people if they care if we swear, and then it got 100% please swear. Please, God, swear. We want you to swear. So we're allowed to swear.
Great. Fuck. All right.
We starting the year off right. Here we
go. Got that one out of the way.
Someone at some
point in the fullness of time is listening to this with like their mom, and they're like, "Oopsie!"
Oh yeah.
No, I swear.
I did
not.
Have a friend of ours. A friend of ours did ask if the show was family friendly, so they could listen to it in the car with their kid. I was like, "Well, mostly."
I think it's family get kind friendly. Of,
I like it is, but we do talk about like
nasty
evisceration.
Stuff. Look, and, mythology is effed up.
It is. Yeah, and we're excited to talk about it again. It's been a minute, but this is still Stone Houses, an amateur guide to fiction, fable, and folklore. I'm Caitlin Bruder.
And I'm Laura Bernadette Meeker.
What the heck?
Wow, that was a mess.
Wow. Oh,
I thought you said, when you said it's been a minute, you were remarking on the sheer length of that bit.
Oh, yeah. The minute length bit. No, it's been like, I think we started recording like 3 minutes ago, but I'm sure I'll cut a good 2.5 of that out.
Good. Brevity is the soul of wit. Anyway.
Surely. What are we talking about?
Well, we're talking about talking trees. We're talking Woo-hoo. About how trees talk. Because they've been, people been doing that for a long time. People have been saying that happens and telling stories about it for a long time. I'm not saying that I've ever encountered a talking tree, but, you know.
I'm sure they're out there.
I think it makes sense. Trees, real old stuff.
Yeah.
Probably smart. Also, people are programmed to see patterns in everything, and we're really mm-hmm. good at picking out human faces and shadows and everything, and in the kind of wonky knots and bark patterns of trees, it's easy to see them. Also, anything can be anthropomorphized.
It sure can, and we're very good at it.
Yeah.
Is there any etymology corner for this week, or do we think it's pretty straightforward?
I think it's pretty straightforward.
Sometimes you surprise me. I wanted to ask.
Well, I can give you a really boring etymology for the word dryad, which is...
Yes, I would love that.
So dryads, of course, being tree spirits, and it's from dryos, meaning oak. So it just does mean tree.
Perfect.
Very short. Very... It didn't change much. It kind of stayed the same.
Mm. Yeah, we do have a lot of trees, just like, who are just like little guys hanging out, like, throughout, like, all mythology, folklore, etc. There's, like, tons and tons of tropes that are about trees specifically. Like you said, there's the wise tree, wizened, this old oak or willow or whatever who has the info and the wisdom to help out the hero in a story. There's like the evil attacking trees who have like sometimes are mobile, they're upright, they kind of get you Venus flytrap style. We have people who have turned into trees, which goes, you know, way back.
Apollo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Apollo and Daphne, I believe.
When you, is it her dad that turns her into a tree? Look, it's fucked up.
It is messed up. She's being followed by Apollo, and she ends up getting shot by one of Eros's arrows.
Anyway, nothing is good for Daphne in that situation.
She basically cries out to the gods, please help me. And then they turn her into a laurel tree. Oof. But we've got, you know, I mean, sometimes it's a reward or a punishment, you know, depending on the story. We've got intelligent forests where you've got like the whole like neural network. The whole forest is like the collective consciousness. There's like plant aliens, plant people, like toadies, like dryads, like you said. There's like the quasi-sentient, like the they're watching you like type vibes. And then we have like the Ents, the tree Ents, like the plant person, plant tree guy who's, it's a lot of high fantasy stuff. I in my head think of tree Ents and like living trees as a very like, that's a fantasy, high fantasy thing. But there's like a lot of sci-fi that is like classic sci-fi stuff that deal with living trees or sentient trees, which I thought was really interesting. But a lot of these tree creatures, tree entities, tree stories are like either really long lived or nearly immortal. And so that's where kind of you get a lot of the old and wise, because, you know, trees get big when they get old. And that's, you know, kind of a trait assigned to getting higher in age as you have experience, you have wisdom. So we've got like the full spectrum of helpful to the hero to antagonistic in all respects, depending on your story, mood, and time of day, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, look, you want a version of these trees? They're happening.
They're there. Sorry. Yeah, pretty much any concept you could have is out there.
I got really distracted by, Monica Gagliano, who did this cool study on, I think it's corn shoots, about, you know, plants hearing sound, or rather responding to recordings of water flowing and moving towards that as if it were a source of water, which is pretty cool.
That's really cool. I didn't know that. I love that.
That's awesome. I think it's pretty awesome. If I were a plant, I'd be pretty PO'd. That's not water. That's a speaker.
I know there's like been, I mean, this would probably be a whole other section that I didn't do any research on, which maybe would have been a thing to do for this one, but like science into plant sentience, like that kind of a thing.
Yeah. Or
what was the thing? It was like spinach sends emails, like that kind of, it's not real sentience, but it's like, you know, triggering some sort of mechanism to, you know, communicate, I mean, huge quotes with people.
It's so loaded to talk about because people hear like plants hearing or plants speaking and are like, but are they really? And it's like, no, they don't have structures or brains that are similar to ours, but they do have methods by which they respond to vibrations in the air, which is sound, which is hearing, and they have ways to communicate through the release of organic chemicals, and they have receptors, and that's a kind of communication. I think it's called a wilting fern. Let me look it up real quick. Okay, Fittonia is native to Peru. It is a nerve plant, and it, quote-unquote, faints when it needs care, essentially. But there's also stuff like certain kinds of onion, not, like, necessarily onions, but, like, in that family of mustard greens will release a chemical when they are being, like, if something's being eaten, it'll release this chemical or communicate with nearby plants in some way where they will start producing a lot more bitter and unpleasant chemicals. So anything that's kind of just chowing down on this patch of greenery is like, oh, gross, I don't want to eat these anymore.
These have gone bad, surely.
So it's a case of, like, go on without me, brother. I shall give you this information as I die.
Isn't that the thing that, like, the smell of cut grass, where people are like, oh yeah, it's grass screaming.
That's pretty dramatic, but
it very much is, but I love it. In like real world stuff, when I talked about the intelligent forest, like that collective consciousness hive mind of like a forest in fiction or something, there is like, I remember this must have been like a biology 100 class in college, but we talked a lot about this thing that happens with like fungus.
Oh, yes. I did a whole project on that, which is...
Yeah, I hate mushrooms. It freaks me out so bad. I hated everything about that unit in that class. It was really very upsetting, but I do remember... Yes, yeah. So, I do remember the fungi. They have this like symbiosis with the forest. A fascinating thing about them
and trees in general that work, not necessarily like aspen trees, quaking aspens are literally... networks in the way of like, you mm-hmm. know, like the biggest plant on earth is this mushroom that takes up a bunch of space. It's actually a quaking aspen who I think is called Pando, which I love.
Oh,
that's fun. Anyway, yeah, they gave it a name, but it's interconnected with itself. But the point is that with mycorrhizae and with other symbiotic mushrooms, they're actually benevolent in a way in that.
Mm-hmm.
If like another tree is lacking in a resource, and they have a certain amount of it, it will pass to them, and there's like a redistribution of minerals, and like there is an element of like, well, maybe that's just essentially osmosis or, you know, diffusion. I guess osmosis is just with water. Diffusion. and it is like a chemical process, but it's still a thing mm-hmm. that happens, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it's a totally like symbiotic thing. Like the fungus will like grows into the roots and they help the plants like pull nutrients from the soil and trade like the sugars and nutrients produced in return from the plant's photosynthesis. So it's like this little like,
yeah, a good
I
way
got this for you, you give to me. It's a good little part barter.
A good way to think about barter. It is that mushrooms are like, man, I always thought it's such a bummer that elves and dwarves are pitted against each other in fiction, because it is, elves and dwarves and trees and mushrooms go together great, because trees, yeah. you know, collect sunlight, create sugar. The mushrooms literally kind of mine for, mm-hmm. for, you know, minerals and give them back, and that's a relationship they have, and it works in harmony.
Yeah.
I swear that made sense.
That's very sweet. No, it does. It makes sense out loud, too, and I think it's very sweet. I guess we could take that as a foothold to put us back into fiction land.
Old Man Willow.
Yeah, there you go. There's a lot of, like, different types of, like, tree people, living trees, sentient trees, like, visually, but also, like we said, in alignment, in story, in, like, trope they take. So there's, like, the classic, which is, like, the tree with the face in the trunk, which gives them, like, that direct communication, like, hi, I have a person face and
hello.
I can, you know, talk to you. Then there's, like, the step removed from that where they have, like, a face-ish, like, a structure in the trunk that's, like, holes or
mouth,
knots
eyes,
in the
whatever.
Wood. Yeah, like,
we're
that
so
suggests
good at
faces.
Seeing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we talk about it all the time, but like how we gotta see faces, like that's we're programmed to, and so like the limbs or whatever, making a nose on the tree, and you can kind of see that kind of thing. And those ones, I feel like, not always, but generally, you get like the Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs movie where it's like they're the scary in the forest, the scowling,
man.
Exaggerated horror. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Fear
and then
response.
There's the like, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And then if there's, like, if it's, like we were talking about earlier, if someone was transformed, maybe it is just that plant, or maybe it is, you have, like, a little bit of that person's physicality to it, like a, you can, like, a humanoid shape in it, or you can see part of a face, or part of a, you know, something like that, where you can just remaining on the tree trunk or in the branches, where it, like, is, there are essence of humanoid nature, but it is not, you know, a human anymore.
I'm always a big fan of that just because of the spooky aspect.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of benevolent versions. Like, I think in some versions of Cinderella, her mother is like, she planted some seeds or cried over a grave and then a tree grew or, you know.
That sounds very, yeah, folklore-y.
Absolutely. You know, it can be good. People get advice a lot from trees.
Yeah.
Talking to the trees.
Do you, I don't know if I would even be able to recall this name. I'd probably have to look it up. There's an artist who does those, like, bog figures where they, like, build humanoid shapes out of, like, wood in bogs, and then, like, the bog grows over them.
Oh, no, maybe, I know.
Probably. Anywhere, they're so cool. I think that is, so, like, not quite the same thing, but, like, a human, like, a person made out of the nature, of the environment, of wood specifically. So cool. I'll try to find some photos and post them on the
Well,
on
there's the apparently a specific kind of wood called Irish bog oak.
Ooh.
And someone called Trisha Rogers has gotten herself to the top of the Google results for that. So good for them.
Hell yeah.
Hard to do that.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of like figures in the woods, made of wood from the woods. Like I know there's like a bunch of troll sculptures. That's really fun. We've talked about those before. Uh-huh. I think I posted those when we did the troll episode a millennia ago. But things like that, where it's just you build building structures and building entities out of the wood, like in a forest, in a natural area. So cool. So cool. Very haunting sometimes. Very cool to look at.
There's, at least in, I realize I skipped over, in mythology, there's the kind of halfway thing where sometimes it is a literal tree that's granting wisdom, sometimes it's a deity or something speaking through the tree, like, the burning bush for some reason.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I was like, biblical, there it is, yeah.
Is that? I'm trying to remember, this should not go in the episode, but there's definitely a piece of media I watched as a child where there's a burning bush and it goes like, hey, come over here. That was really stupid and funny. Anyway.
Good.
I looked up something, but the result was from cryptids.fandom.com, so I'm going to go to another source.
I have definitely looked at that website before.
This is a case of like, I wonder where this story comes from, because the source it gives is Alexander the Great and the Tree of the Sun and the Moon, but a bunch of sources list, quote-unquote, in Indian mythology, so
yeah,
that's
the
question. Yeah,
I found that one under Indian mythology.
Yeah, so that's the question, is because the Wikimedia Commons page has a single sentence where Alexander the Great visits them, so it's the question of, okay, is this something that's actually part of Indian mythology and is just a little harder to find, or is it something that has...
This one line that was written and copy and pasted 100 dozen times and now we're not going to know. We're not going to figure out what they're talking about.
Yeah, that was invented in this... All of the sources I'm seeing are from this, are from things regarding Alexander the Great, which isn't necessarily, like, he did hang out all over, Eurasian continent. Wow, I cannot talk. He did kind of go all over Eurasia, but, I don't see anything that shows it's actually from Indian mythology, just that Alexander the Great went to paradise, maybe, and there was the things.
It says, the prophecy of the tree of the sun and the moon is an ancient Persian legend that tells, while marching towards India, Alexander the Great encountered two trees, and at this place he was told a prophecy that was later fulfilled. Okay, but then here I have on a spirituality website... It says, the Indian tree of the sun and the moon told the future. It had two trunks, one speaking in the daytime as male, the other at night as a female. All the trees in the oak grove of the Greek god Zeus were endowed with the gift of prophecy as he spoke through the rustling of their leaves. Wood from these trees spoke even after being cut. So I can't find a direct source that's consistent, but...
I mean, people said it enough.
It's around.
You know? Don't exactly know where it originated from, but it does kind of look like...
That's a speaking through, God speaking through nature. We've got, there's stuff like druids were said to talk to oak trees for guidance. So pulling information
honestly,
from nature, maybe they were
I'm
getting,
pretty
you know,
sure
info
that they
from...
were that they were tripping most of the time that that happened. Because that's what I would do if I was living in, you know, prehistory. Mm-hmm. And I was surrounded by a bunch of plants. And I knew that some of those plants gave me a good time.
There you go. There was a Greek legend of two philosophers who were arguing under an elm tree. And then the tree joined the conversation. Which is very fun. Like, hello, I'm also involved. There's English folklore has the rhyme Elm du Brood.
Oh, sorry. I was trying to find the source. We run into this thing, I feel like, with this, every topic we have, like, the top 2 to 3 pages of Google results are the same copypasta.
Yep.
Over and over and over. It opened up a Facebook page, and the first thing was a post saying, "Wow, Facebook has finally gone total alt left. I cannot post that I have a blog somewhere else." Totally alt left. Cannot handle it. Haha. Okay, I'm gonna read part of this. So this is from Philostratus, Life of Apollonius, which you know is good because it's broken down into, like, verses and lines, which shows that, wow, okay, this old. But it's Apollonius and Damis, essentially having an argument under this elm tree, but the part that I immediately got caught on was, "Hey, you tree yonder," he cried, pointing to an elm tree, the third in the row from under that which they were talking. "Just salute the wise Apollonius, will you?" And forthwith the tree saluted him, as it was bidden to do, in accents which were articulate and like those of a woman. And I
oh,
that's
wow. Very specific.
Yeah. So what this it seems to be is a dialogue between quote-unquote Greek wisdom and quote-unquote Indian wisdom. So make of that what you will, at the very least, make of that in the context of people kind of gormlessly quoting this as being from Indian mythology. That might be true and just a really hard thing to find on the front page of the internet, but, you know, I'm not on Reddit. I don't know why I said front page of the internet. You know what I mean.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And as always, we are not experts. We are just doing our best, so we will let you know when we find things that seem oddly sourced, but we cannot 100% of the time find you hashtag the truths.
There
so.
Is, boy, a lot of this dialogue is concerned with how kind of sinfully decorated foreign women are and how that draws to bad philosophy and weakness of mind, and that's fun. But, you know, if you want to find it, Philostratus, Life of Apollonius, the 3rd century biography of a charismatic teacher and miracle worker from the 1st century CE who is often likened to Jesus of Nazareth. Sure.
Sure.
Kind of a big pull to compare anyone to. Like that.
Big if true. That was bold.
I don't know what, maybe he did other stuff in his life that more directly paralleled it, but that's like a big, that's a big thing to compare yourself to.
Bold of him.
Real bold. Sorry, I love going down those little pits of like, where
did
this
is fun.
From?
This is great. It's what this show is for.
Old Man Willow, I wanted to mention. So, mostly because I feel like Lord of the Rings has a lot of iconic talking trees. And it's not in the movie, because I think Peter Jackson made a lot of very good editing choices, because if they did directly adapt Fellowship of the Ring, it would be such a slog. But... God, it's so frustrating to read. So there's this point where they're going through the quote-unquote old forest, which is traveling to the Withywindle, which is kind of nearish the Shire. Like, they've pretty much just set out. And they're warned, like, you know, stay on the path, blah, 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 do this. I realize that you could put it down to, like, well, there's some kind of psychic magic going on, but they're always like, all right, I'm going to fall asleep at the base of this tree, or I'm going to hang out in this area with ghosts. But Old Man Willow is a tree that almost eats Mary, I guess. But it's like, it's that forest in particular, and I guess Mirkwood in The Hobbit are very much stereotypical evil forest trees, where they're like, we don't like you people. We hate you. We hate your species in particular, and if you sit here, I'ma eat you.
Munch, munch, munch.
I also like the idea of, I think it's when they get to the mountains of Crodthras, where it's like, these rocks remember the elves and dwarves of the past, but they hate these new ones.
Oh boy.
I don't know.
They've got some opinions.
Tolkien has very opinionated environments.
Well, the Ents are Tolkien's.
Yes.
The, like, they were, like, his thing, and there's, like,
He
made them instead of, like, taking this existing thing from mythology, even though there's stuff that are like it. It's, you know, not entirely.
Definitely.
Unique. But he does, he has the copyright claim on it. So,
yeah.
Like,
codifier, if you will.
Yeah, you can't use the word Ent. Like, D&D tried to use it, and they ended up getting a cease and desist.
I think it's the same with Hobbit,
so, which is
right?
Why they're Treants. What was that?
Hobbit, right? Same thing? Where it,
maybe.
It the
yeah.
actual term Hobbit, you can't say it, so you gotta say Halfling.
Yeah, Halfling. Yeah. The other we get, that's what we get, Treant, and then there's, like, you use, like, tree men, tree folk, that kind of a thing, which I had a website describe as more lawyer-friendly. So you're not going to get slapped on the wrist by Tolkien's estate.
That's the sound it makes when they get slapped on the wrist. So a thing I found interesting, particularly pertaining to us two people as human mm-hmm. beings existing in the world, Ents draw pretty heavily on the kind of medieval idea of the Green Man.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, there's a lot in, because it was just such a pervasive idea in the Western world, and in some parts, but mostly what's documented is from Middle East and westward,
mm-hmm.
in terms of, like, hey, Osiris Green, because he's corpse. So the idea of a green man, all over Western mythology. The Wikipedia page likes to note that Osiris was typically shown with a green face, which I think was probably more of a reference to him being undead than it was to him being tree-like or his connection to nature. But, green men as this kind of representation of the old pagan world, the world, in a lot of cases, the world before Christianity, shows up a lot. Also, it's just, I feel like it's just a fun thing to carve on your, because it's like, okay, my favorite thing is there are three common types of green man when it comes to ornamentation on building. One, the foliate head, completely covered mm-hmm. in green leaves.
The
two,
leaves, I love it.
The disgorging head, spews vegetation from its mouth. Three, the bloodsucker head, sprouts vegetation from all facial orifices.
Oh my gosh. Just going above and beyond, really.
So, we saw The Green Knight.
We did. It's the first movie we saw in theaters.
Since
pre-pandemic.
famous, I'll quote directly from the Wikipedia page here. The Green Knight in this poem serves as both a monster antagonist and as a mentor, belonging to a pre-Christian world which seems antagonistic to, but is in the end harmonious with, the Christian one. Which is a pretty good way to sum up the interplay between this old world of growth and trees and forests and, you know, good old Christianity.
Mm-hmm. And we've talked briefly about the Green Knight in a couple of different episodes, for sure. King Arthur, I know we mentioned it. We mentioned it in the Headless episode.
He's a pretty, in the adaptation, most recent, he's a pretty straightforward walk and talk and tree. Like, very tree.
Yes.
Very yeah. tree. Mm-hmm. Excellent to look at. Great noises.
Very good.
A lot of noises in that film that everyone loves.
Sure.
That was the well that I was dipping from, the look at these pictures of the green men thing.
I love that.
But
that was your original pitch for this episode was the green men specifically.
Okay,
yeah, like a year ago.
So there's this picture. So green men, I think even past the kind of advent of really heavily enforced Christianity or Catholicism, green men are such a prevalent aspect in, well, because like a lot of people are going to be living in and around these forests and have and be accessing maybe a less standardized version of religion, but green men had a lot to do with different kinds of celebrations that were kind of adopted into the Christian calendar. So, like, a bunch of Western celebrations all the way back to Greece, and then as recently as, like, today, have the idea of, like, a green man as an aspect of that celebration. Part of it, maybe in reference to the Green Knight visiting for Christmas, you know. Hello, it's me.
Yeah, there you go.
But the reason I bring this up is because May Day, it was traditional for a long time to have people kind of dressing up in green and running around in representations of spring. And I think that this is a great illustration of a May Day 18th century cartoon.
Oh, that's amazing.
Which I can only describe as a conical hedge in which a hole has been cut out for a man's face, and that's the whole costume.
He looks like he's having a good time, though. I'm happy for him.
It's like he wants to take part in the dancing, but he can't take his arms out, so he's just bobbing there.
I'll post this on Twitter when the episode goes up. This is very good.
It's real good. It's...
Oh my gosh.
I just enjoy these guys.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like part of it is green man fun to draw, fun to look at.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Because
just a visually interesting guy.
Visually interesting. It's the element of a lot of... it's used in a lot of, like, architectural things where it's like, we have this bit of our building that's not decorated. What if we carved it into a face? So, you know, falls into that kind of category.
Yeah. A very good, like, building facade adornment. You know? Like, it's just like a cool, fancy building. There's also a guy with a face made of leaves.
Face made of leaves!
He is. They also, visuals of this, of, like, Green Man stuff is, like, very cool. I will, again, another thing I will find a bunch of pictures of, because I think they do look so cool.
It's a lot of, like, sweeping forms, get to kind of draw a beard without drawing a beard. It's like, how often do you get to include both a face and, like, a plant without having to draw anything else? Pretty cool. There's also the association of, like, even past Gawain and the Green Knight, there's, you know, Santa often depicted as wearing, like, a crown of holly or having these ornamentations.
Oh,
or, like, in The Christmas Carol, the Ghost of Christmas Present, extremely green man-ish.
Yes. Oh, very. Wow. Yeah, I didn't even put that together.
Yeah, there's just an element of, like, plenty and rebirth and tends to get associated a lot with these kind of renewal holidays, like, and Christmas is a great example, May Day, where it's like, here is a representation of the earth returning, of the earth's power, of our connection to it. Also, it just looks cool. Yeah. Then, you know, sometimes you want to put on a little hat of made of trees. Made of leaves.
I love it.
I rest my case. Counselor?
Good. I love it. I have a handful of just, like, little snippets. Of just, you know, allusions to things in the same vein. There is an English rhyme in English folklore that says, "Elm do brood and oak do hate, but the willow walks when you travel late." So there's oak groves or like collections of oak trees were thought to be full of what were called oakmen. So like vengeful fae, fairies type of thing, who would like give travelers poisonous fungi, have them eat it, whatever. And willows were thought to like uproot themselves in the dark, after dark, and like walk around behind travelers and like mutter to them. So cool. Like I'm obsessed with that whole visual. Just like, and I love willow trees. You've been to my house. My childhood home has this big willow tree right in front. So I love willow trees. My great grandma had like dozens of willow trees at her house. So like I love willow trees. So this visual specifically made me like, I was like, I love this. This is so good.
Willows are great.
Just following, muttering in the dark after travelers to freak him out. So good.
I feel like I have to defend myself continuously going willow because there's a lot of singing in Fellowship of the Ring, and Tom Bombadil sings a lot about Old Man Willow. And himself.
Oh, good. In Japanese folklore, there is the Juboku, which is a yokai that's created when a tree grows where a battlefield was, where a lot of death happened. And this tree gains a taste for human blood from the soil. And so it's one, it's Venus flytrap style where it'll start to grab people who get too close and like drain them of their blood, and leaving their body to be pecked at by scavenging birds. So another little symbiotic relationship.
It started out sounding kind of like poetic and melancholy, but nope, it's ready to eat.
Nope, eats ya. Yep. And then we talked about Daphne and Apollo, the turning into a tree. There's a Lithuanian story, the tale of Elga, a woman who married a snake who can turn into a handsome prince. They had three sons and a daughter, and eventually Elga's family threatens to kill her husband and attempts to get information out of her kids. All three sons kept, you know, their loyalties. They didn't say anything, but their daughter they scared the shit out of her, and she, you know, told them about what, you know, about her father, which ended up with her grandparents, her mother's side of the family, coming and killing the husband with scythes. And eventually, you know, she finds out that her husband was killed, and she curses herself and her children to turn into trees. Her sons were strong, sturdy oak, ash, and birch, and then her daughter, she turned into, quote, a quaking aspen, and then the mother turns herself into a spruce tree. So a little bit of a...
It's fun that they had a variety.
Right, yeah, everybody gets something different, just something fun. Spice it up.
This is...
So, like, more grief turning to nature, or rage, a strong emotion, and then becoming part of nature. Something that I feel like is pretty common. And then this is a theater reference. It is not so, it's not so much like lore, but there's it's Kashi the Deathless, but it's not, I don't know if it, I didn't look too far into this, but it's spelled differently than, I mean, we already know there's like five different versions of Kashi the Deathless if you've listened, you know, to us for a while.
Yeah.
But it is K-A-S-H-C-H-E-Y, Kashi the Deathless. And it says that Kashyevna, there we go, turns into a beautiful weeping willow at some point in it. But it's very much like the turning into trees, being startled by trees seeming to be alive, seeming to be sentient, trees that are sentient, trees that remove themselves from the ground in the night to chase you around, like all that kind of thing. Like it is a thing that has been happening forever and ever and ever, and I think it's really cool. It's cool that we've got, I mean, all over the world, wherever there's trees, you're gonna find stories of trees that have been, you know, personified in some way, because that's just what we do, that kind of a thing. We make nature, we give our surroundings different context, you know.
It's interesting.
It's very cool.
I have kind of a long walk to bring you on because I did get excited when you mentioned this woman in a tree. So
I'm ready. I'm excited.
In the 70s in India, they're called the Chipko movement, which literally means hug, to hug or to cling to. Unsure if that's how you pronounce it. I'm very sorry if not. But if you look up 1970s women's movement logging, but essentially these women, it's kind of the precursor to the idea of like activists chaining themselves to a tree to prevent logging. These women just literally either hugged or made rings around these old growth trees as both a protest to logging and to physically stop people from cutting them down.
Yeah.
Which is pretty metal, and I love
Very cool. Very brave.
But on kind of a extension of that, because they do say in the article that they were inspired by the women in India who threw their arms around trees to protect forests from being destroyed, which is, I don't know why I said it in a mocking way. I'm all for this. More than 70 women in Bristol, this is from BBC News, quote-unquote, married some trees to highlight, you know, as a general protest. But essentially, they had a big event where a bunch of women and girls and people dressed up in mostly white gowns or in traditional, what I really do like, in traditional Indian wedding garb. Indian women who attend...
Beautiful.
British Indian women who attended mostly wore... traditional garb. Some of the people wore like pagan inspired stuff. Like there's just a bunch of great outfits. People showed up and had this this ceremony,
colorful coming together of
like, hey, don't cut this down. I love it.
Protecting the trees. Yeah. Aww, I love that.
And then tangentially, multiple women have legally big question mark because it's like if this came down to defending it in court, would it stand up, that kind of thing. But multiple women have legally married trees, including Karen Cooper, in an attempt to this is in Florida, she attempted to keep it from being cut down. I believe she was successful. There's no there's no update to the story, so I can only hope that she was not widowed at an early age.
Happily wed, still to this day.
But it's happened a couple times. It's one of those, like, haha, let's get in the news trending. But, like, I'm sure to some people this is a very significant thing. It's hard to tell if Kate Cunningham in... as another British example, quote-unquote married a tree, an elderflower tree, apparently. Elder tree, sorry. But, I do believe that it's, like, a statement. Hard to tell from some of the stuff that she says. I think she is trolling the media bit, which I love. We have such a loving relationship. It's going stronger than ever. And I'm like, good for you. Just because of the coverage of it is so sensational. Because it's not like, let's talk about logging and how, you know, kind of the industrial world is destroying forests and blah, 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 and monoculture and stuff. No. Yeah. Woman marries tree. Woman. Yeah. Have sex with tree? Oh. But, you know.
Yeah, that checks out.
So what is your favorite, or if not favorite, is there a specific animated tree that comes to mind when you were thinking of this?
Yeah, I think my first, like, thought when we were, like, when I was moving more into, like, so when we first talked about, like, they said it was the Green Man stuff, which I was thinking of a decoration from, like, my childhood in someone's yard that I couldn't probably place. But once I started, like, looking into media stuff, I think my first thought would have probably been the forest from Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, the animated Disney movie from, you know, whatever, because it scared the shit out of me as a kid. which is also interesting because all of them were just personified. None of them were ever actually alive. She just got scared in the woods, you know? But that would, I think that would have been my first thought.
That's one of those movies I watched as a child and then never watched again because I was freaked out by it. So I'm there with you.
My sister was obsessed with that movie. We watched it several times a week for a significant amount of time when we were younger because it was her favorite movie. She was younger, so like she liked it, whatever, and I was the older sister, so I just had to deal with it because sometimes stuff I wanted to watch would be too old for them, so I always had to, like, you know, downgrade my media consumption to be at the level of my sister. So we watched it all the time, and that's probably why it sticks out so much in my mind.
I always I forget if it was a cousin or someone I was babysitting, but they watched Cinderella hundreds of times, and yet I have little to no memory of anything that happens in that film. Proving that the brain can edit itself for its own defense.
There you go. If you were cursed to become a tree, or saved by becoming a tree, or just chose to, what type of tree? What type of tree would you be?
That's so hard.
Give me a top three.
As a kid, I was really always attached to birch trees because of how useful the bark is. I don't know. Weeping willows are pretty cool. Let's say. What's a third one? What's a third kind of tree?
What's a third type of tree?
A maple tree. A sugar maple. There you go. I want to be a useful tree.
Perfect. I think my top three would be... also, birch, willow, and apple tree, because those are three trees I have significant attachment to from childhood.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. Dear listeners, tell us what your tree sona is.
Yeah. Give us your...
I want to know why, what trees you like and why.
Okay. Sorry. You can cut this out, but if anthropomorphized animals, if that sona is a fursona, what is the tree equivalent?
Leafies.
The one that I thought of when we were chose this was in Pajama Sam. There are a couple of talking trees, but in the is it the first one? I think No Need to Hide When It's Dark Outside. Yeah, I think that's the first one. The point is, the trees are very snooty and do not let people through. So Sam wears a log on his head. It tends to be a tree.
There you go. Yeah, I love that.
Love that.
I didn't have any, like, sometimes with these we have like a way to defeat or, you know, whatever the creature. There's such a wide variety of these that there was no one. But I think that's your way to win against a tree creature is put a log on your head. Put a log on your head.
Just kind of... upsetting. I don't know. I was like, if someone snuck past me by wearing a human suit.
Oh no.
A suit of human skin. That seems fine. Yeah,
that's
sure.
A creature, I'm sure. That's something somewhere.
Yeah, why not?
If I told you about the necro pants, we won't talk about that episode.
Skin pants.
Google necro pants if you want a fun little piece of information that will probably upset you deeply. We'll talk about them another episode.
Oh, Kaylin Doherty, Ask a Mortician, recently did a really good, like, hour-long thing on books bound in human skin, kind of the ethics. Ooh. And the ethics of mythology and kind of the, what's it called? Sensationalism of and, you know, talking about that kind of thing, which I think is very interesting and thoughtful and worth checking out if you look up necropants and you're like, God, where can I get more of this skin?
More of that. There you go. Where can I get more of that skin?
Where can you?
Anyways, we've gotten far from the topic. I don't have anything else I don't have anything else as before the final corners, if you do.
Yeah. It's nice that in all these illustrations of Apollo and Daphne, she's still a hot tree.
A hot tree. Yeah, there you go. There's some actually really beautiful, it's a horrible story, but some very beautiful sculptures.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking, if you ever read Percy Jackson, I think one of the characters, yes, like, is introduced as a tree. Having previously been turned to quote unquote save them. God, all the gods and that are such dinguses.
Yeah. I can't think of her name, but yeah, it's a TH. Her name's like a TH something. Anyways, I think we have come to our very important question. Mm? Sentient trees, can they get it?
Oh boy. Well, I'll tell you what. These Daphne trees, absolutely.
Absolutely.
They're very curvaceous. posed in possibly the most provocative ways possible.
Yeah. I'm going to go to a limb and say that trees. Out on a limb. Trees, out on a limb. and I will leaf it at that. No, and I think they can get it. I think big hulking tree creatures can get it.
Yeah, I mean, it's sure. I think they're pretty cool. I mean, like, I feel like a lot of stuff that involves like making tree people like tends to use the really beautiful and attractive parts of trees that we as humans are like, ah, lovely, lush.
Right.
But yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
I forgot about that as a segment.
I know, I did add it in my show notes last time we were recording episodes, so I wouldn't forget because we kept forgetting. So now it's in there permanently, so we will remember from now on.
Incredible.
Let's see, what do we got? We got a tabletop corner, which, I mean, Ents, that's just kind of, it's very high fantasy, Trent. Obviously. Trent the Treant. Yeah, Magic the Gathering, obviously, D&D, Pathfinder, things like GURPS, Mage Knight, GURPS. Deadlands. Like, just it's just a thing. It's a thing that happens in a lot of tabletop games, RPGs, that kind of a thing. Very common. In pop culture, again, also shows up literally everywhere. The Buffy the Vampire Slayer comics, Guardians of the Galaxy, Nightmare Before Christmas, Shrek the Third, Swamp Thing, Snow White, Over the Garden Wall, Little Shop of Horrors, Lord of the Rings, Maleficent, Narnia, Acquisitions Incorporated, Berserk, Digimon, Inuyasha, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, Naruto, Doctor Who, X-Files, The Adventure Zone, Dark Souls, Don't Starve, Wario World, Dragon Age, Gunnacre Court, Little Bear, Winx Club, Courage's Cowardly Dog, Percy Jackson, all of everything. And I did write down two very specifically that I copy and pasted from a website because I think this is the description of these. Very good. There's a film called Trees, and the description is, a great white pine serves the same role as a shark from Jaws in killing and attacking people. Apparently, this isn't an uncommon creature, because the sequel, Trees 2, The Root of All Evil, has a killer Christmas tree attacking the town.
Hmm. I see that it has a 4.8 out of 10 on IMDb.
Delightful. And then there's another one called Treevenge, which is about a group of vengeance happy Christmas trees. So I just needed to point those out specifically because it's very funny.
There is either an episode of Simpsons Treehouse of Horror or a comic because they blend together in my brain where there are invasive alien trees. And I think that's excellent. Great.
And of course, there's always more than what I said. I just picked a random smattering from all the different types of tropes.
There is so much
of
stuff.
Living tree. Yeah. It's one of those things where, like, we just could not.
Trees are everywhere, guys.
Trees are everywhere, man. Yeah. Oh, man. Well, thank you so much for joining us for a belated, but another, nonetheless, episode of Stonehouses.
Hey.
I'm not going to make any promises for when the next episode's going to come up, so it'll happen eventually. It'll happen if it happens. I know I've been promising for 2 years that the show is not dead. We just got tired. The pandemic's been hard.
There's a lot. We're tired.
We moved again. That happened.
And now we're in a much more stable place.
Yes. Yeah. Very comfy. We're in a little house. We love our housemates. We got lots of cats.
It's great.
It's nice. It's good. We're doing good. Thank you for everyone who expressed concerns and stuff. It's just shit got hard, you know? And we love doing this. It just takes a little bit of brain power that we just didn't quite have for a while. So we'll try to keep doing these. I cannot promise they will be weekly. I cannot promise they'll be on any regular schedule, but I personally don't want this to, you know, tank and be gone for good. So it just know that it's out there. It's just not going to be as regular as it once was, but we're here. So, hey.
Hey. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. We would like to thank Miles Morkery for our intro and outro music.
Yeah.
At Miles Morkery, MilesMorkri on Twitter, and milesmorkery.bandcamp.com. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please share our show with a friend. Rate, review, subscribe. We love reading your reviews, and also it's very helpful, and it tells podcast hosting sites that we're worth a listen.
Hell yeah.
That's great. It's very helpful. You can check us out at StonehousesCast on Twitter and Instagram for all of our things. All over, anytime we have an episode, we'll post it there. And you'll, you know, get all the fun bits after the show. And thank you so much to those of you who continued tweeting and posting about our show while we were away. We appreciate you very much.
Thank you.
Little shout outs this week from the past 2 years, essentially. Thank you to Morgan and Ollie and Drunk Fido and John and Athligar Elding and John without the H and Lemon Twist and Scott and Nico and Postability and Matthew and Riker and Paige and Jay. Thank you very much for tweeting at us, sending us things. Every once in a while, someone will find a fun folklore thing and tag us in it. People will ask for recommendations and you'll share us. It makes my heart warm. Even though we weren't able to have the brain power to do this, y'all were still thinking about us. So that's very great. Actually, Brent, I don't know if I told you this. When I was on, I had that video go nuts on TikTok.
Oh, yeah.
I had someone comment on it and was like, I recognize it's Caitlin from Stonehouses. And I was like, wow, that's what you know me from?
Famously from Stonehouses.
Yeah, made me so, so thank you. Thank you to you, who, if you are out there still listening. That just
thanks,
made
TikTok
me so happy.
Person.
So thank you. That was delightful. You too can post about us and tag us at StonehousesCast or using hashtag StonehousesCast so we can see it and appreciate you. And we can all be leafy green men together.
Love it.
Yeah. Love it. This has been Stonehouses, an amateur guide to fiction, fable, and folklore. I'm Caitlin Bruder.
I'm Laura Bernadette Meeker.
Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the future.
Farewell.
Bye. Bye.